Welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm speaking with David Rothkopf, who is president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He is the author of Running the World, the Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power, and Superclass, the Global Elite and the World They Are Making. He also writes for Foreign Policy magazine, where he just published his article, How Can a Gun-Crazed Society Lead the World? So let me pose that question to you, David.
Well, I think since the United States has been leading the world for quite some time, clearly it's possible for a gun-crazed society to lead the world because we are clearly a gun-crazed society. However, it hinders us in our ability to lead the world because it casts a shadow over who we are. It casts a shadow over national character. And you can think about it in a purely practical sense. For example, next week, the president of China is coming to the United States. One of the issues the United States has with China is human rights. And inevitably, when the United States raises these issues with the Chinese, they seek areas to find pushback. And when you have, mass attacks in the streets, as we've just had tragically this past weekend, they point to that. And other people who sort of see the United States offering our vision of how the world should work seek to find things to criticize. And when there are such overt flaws, it undermines our ability to advance our views.
So do you think that when an American president encounters that argument with his Chinese counterpart, would it be possible for the American president to say, well, gun violence in this country is actually an extension of our freedom?
Well, I think it's possible to say that. And certainly there have been a lot of people in the United States in the course of the past 48 hours who pointed it out, because naturally, inevitably, when these things happen, people start asking questions about our liberal gun laws and whether they should be reconsidered. And even the father of the poor girl who was tragically killed there said this is, sort of the price we pay for the freedoms that we have. So I'm not saying that there aren't rejoinders. What I am saying, though, is if one seeks to offer an example of moral leadership, if one seeks to offer an example of a society that's constantly able to perfect itself, and yet that society leads the world in civilian gun ownership, that we own 35% to 50% of all the civilian-owned guns on the planet. There are 90 guns in the United States for every 100 people. That raises some questions. And we as a society ought to be looking inward and saying, do we like what this says about us? Do we like this aspect of our society? Is this time for an evolution away from this? What could we do that's consistent with our views of freedom that could move us into a kind of a less violent, less armed place as a society?
Again, I'm speaking with David Rothkopf, who has just written an article for Foreign Policy magazine called How Can a Gun-Crazed Society Lead the World? Of course, the freedom argument, which I was posing with some irony, David Rothkopf, comes down in many ways to an interpretation of the Second Amendment, which the Supreme Court just recently reinterpreted after a decade of settled law, where the predicate to the Second Amendment, which says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, prior to that, the predicate of the well-regulated militia did allow the government some leeway to regulate guns, but the Supreme Court turned that on its head and took the second part of it, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, overturning the D.C. gun law. So that's where we're at. In Arizona, this disturbed individual was able to buy a Glock with apparently some magazines that held a lot of bullets and go on this spree, and he carried it as a concealed weapon without any background check.
Well, look, and that, I mean, the law is deranged as the guy who abused the opportunity. The Supreme Court has clearly embraced a political position on this, and one that's ironically at odds with the kind of strict constructionist views that many of the right-wing judges who supported that decision allegedly have, right? Because that first part of that sentence is extremely significant, and if it weren't significant, it wouldn't have been in the Constitution. And it is explaining the reason why people have a right to guns, and that is for a militia. But we don't have militias. We've long since passed being a society that has militias, and so the predicate no longer actually provides the justification that it did once, and that's the kind of thing that should lead people to reinterpret or even to amend the Constitution, because it's led to, you know, the kind of abuse and kind of gun mania that is so destructive in the United States. You know, 140,000 people have died since 9/11 as a result of gun violence in the United States. That's many, many, many times the number of people killed in terrorist attacks or killed in the wars that we're involved in to fight off terrorism. It's a much greater danger to the security of the United States. And yet we, you know, return to these convoluted, self-serving debates about this right, which actually doesn't exist in the Constitution as it is construed by the most rabid of the pro-gun crowd.
So, David Rothkopf, as a student of American foreign policy, how would you defend this, or how would you explain the right-wing embrace of guns in this country to people abroad who, as you know, in Europe and other countries, they're absolutely mystified?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'd defend it.
I might explain
it by saying, you know, that there is a long historical precedent here in it, and it has come down over time to be associated with a kind of the American spirit, independence, the strength that accrues to the individual in our society, and as often happens with things like that over time, it's become a little, you know, quasi-theological, and we've lost the ability to have a rational discussion about this issue. I mean, you know, take assault weapons, you know, where people were sitting there saying, oh, no, you can't infringe on people's right to, you know, have an AK-47, you know, so what? So they can hunt squirrels with it? I mean, there is no right to have an AK-47, and if there is a right to have an AK-47, it ought to go the same way as, you know, the Constitution's prescription for having only white males be able to vote. Time and technology have changed the nature of weapons. They've changed the nature of society, and the Constitution is designed to keep up with those changes if only the people would.
But I don't understand. There has to be a cultural explanation for why, first of all, in politics in this country, in many ways, the right wing have usurped or grabbed the political high ground. They've effectively confiscated the Bible and appropriated the Constitution. And we are always, the images are always of John Wayne and Ronald Reagan, tall in the saddle. They're all of these kind of Western cowboy kind of images, and liberals are painted as wimps, and I don't understand why guns are associated with strength and manliness, because frankly, only a coward pulls a gun in a fight.
Well, you know, there are Westerns for everybody, and you know, in High Noon, the hero doesn't use the gun, at least until the very end. There, you know, the West didn't become the prosperous West from which you broadcast until the law took the upper hand over those who took the law into their own hands, and you know, that gun culture was subdued to some extent. I agree with you. I think that, you know, the right has taken the high ground, or, you know, not the high ground, but the more advantageous ground on some of these things, in part because the more liberal elements of society stay on the defensive and they're afraid to be assertive here. And you know, this is clearly an issue where the Constitution is being twisted, where the notion of individual rights is being extended to the point that it does damage to community rights of a grievous sort, and it needs to be fixed. You're right. They seize the Bible too, and they, you know, somehow say that there's some, you know, connection between religion and the founding fathers that not only didn't exist, but actually is the opposite of what existed, and that most of the founding fathers, including Washington and Jefferson and others, were deists who did not want to introduce religion, and in fact had seen the damage of the past couple of hundred years of European history that happens when there is too much religion in society. So they are offering not history, but a polemicized version of history that's doing real damage, and it's time for a kind of counterbalancing strong arguments from those who would like to see the kind of improvement and reinvention of American society that the Constitution was actually created to ensure.
Again, I'm speaking with David Rothkopf, who has just written an article for Foreign Policy magazine called How Can a Gun-Crazed Society Lead the World? And in your article, David, you call for changing the tenor of our political discourse in the United States, which is replete with venom-tongued and reckless political extremism and hate-mongering, which have increased over the recent years. In terms of the congresswoman who was shot a couple of days ago and who remains in critical condition, her father, when asked, does your daughter have any enemies, he said, yes, the whole Tea Party. And she ran against a Tea Party candidate who Sarah Palin had endorsed and put a target on a map of her district, targeting it and her for removal. These are the exact words. And the Tea Party candidate, who Gabriel Giffords narrowly defeated in this last election, his name is Jesse Kelly. A part of his campaign against the congresswoman was, you can join me and donate to my campaign and join me in shooting a fully loaded M16. Do you have any comments on this? It all seems so extraordinary.
It is extraordinary, but, you know, it's nauseating. And the reality is that the tenor of the debate in the United States has become uncivil, violent, and extreme. And one can only hope that an event like this actually causes an adjustment. Clearly, the guy who was involved in this shooting didn't have anything like a political agenda. But the culture of hatred, the language of violence, does color the behavior of individuals, and in fact invites abuses from those who are unhinged or unable to sort of understand, you know, what's political rhetoric and what's advice. We need a change. I'm hopeful. You know, Katrina as a hurricane was not necessarily connected to climate change, but it produced a change in the way the United States viewed that issue. And, you know, sometimes history doesn't move like a timeline. It's more like a billiards game. And, you know, an event ricochets off something and produces another reaction. This was not an extremist act, but it may change our view towards extremist dialogue. And it's hard to imagine, you know, Sharon Engel talking about Second Amendment political solutions today, after this tragedy. It's hard to imagine Sarah Palin putting gun targets on congressional districts after this. And one hopes that the revulsion at the venomous language that is sort of called into focus by an event like this may produce some kind of modulation in this debate in the United States and may produce pushback from those who would abuse and overstate and fire up people through this kind of lowest common denominator, really grotesque approaches.
Well, just in closing, David Rothkopf, in the Constitution or in the preamble, it mentions a decent respect for the opinions of mankind. And foreign policy, of course, would involve a decent respect for the opinions of mankind. And it's a question of how much the average American cares about the rest of the world, what they think. But obviously, it's important for those who conduct foreign policy. And that's, in many ways, I take it, why you wrote this article. The respect for the U.S. has taken some terrible hits recently, as you know, during the Bush administration. They still have not been held accountable for torture, which has had really malignant and far-reaching effects on our foreign policy, simply because all the dictators in the world now say, well, we can go ahead and torture because you, the Americans, do it. So we've lost the moral high ground there. You're saying that when the president meets with the Chinese leader in the next couple of weeks, he's been undercut in his arguments about human rights because of these shootings. And just in closing, the irony is that when these congresswoman's window was smashed back in March, when she was threatened and another one of her officers in Arizona was shot at, it was because of her vote on the health care bill. And my understanding is that one of the measures of a civilized and compassionate society is the extent to which it takes care of its own citizens and their health. So we seem to be really kind of losing sight as a society and a country of the good opinions of mankind.
I totally agree with you. I believe that the past 10 years have been extremely damaging to the United States and have revealed really deep flaws in the U.S. national character. Any society would have been shocked by 9/11. But a just society with the proper set of values would not then have resorted to torture, the violation of international law, and the things that we did in the wake of that, including Abu Ghraib and a host of other instances. In the same way, you know, we self-righteously, you know, twist our own constitution in a way that allows deranged individuals to get a hold of advanced weapons of destruction, you know, of individual destruction, and use them. And the result is that the United States' moral standing in the world, our ability to lead, is tarnished in a way that's going to take years and years to address. But we're not going to change simply because the rest of the world may look down on us. The only way we're going to change is if we look within ourselves and ask, is this the kind of society that we want to be? Is it a society that embraces torture? Is it a society that can conduct Abu Ghraib? Is it a society that violates international law? Is it a society that's the most weaponized civil society in the world? Or do we want to be something different? And I think most Americans at some level do want to be something different. And the only thing we can hope is that tragic events like these catalyze the change that lead us to a better place.
I thank you for joining us here today on Background Briefing, David Rothkopf.
Thanks a lot.
And again, David Rothkopf is President and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power, and Superclass, The Global Elite and the World They Are Making. He also writes for Foreign Policy magazine, which has just published his article, How Can a Gun-Crazed Society Lead the World? I thank producer Spencer Downing, engineer Ray Palias. I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with Background Briefing. Bye.